question for you is, are you willing to resist? Are you willing to stand up? See what happens when you do. These are examples of types of resistance. We hear students from the 60s discussing revolution. We hear a stoned out 60s burnout on a TV show. We listen to the Beats, and we listen to Frank Zappa. These are examples of resistance here on the Chill Room on killradio.org. And this is dedicated to all of you who know how to resist. Because the simple answer is, it's always different from what they tell you. It's always different from what they tell you. It's always different from what they tell you.
Run down for the past 300 years. If y'all so wise and heavy, why didn't you join us back in the beginning? No, you just go back and tell them, sorry, this motherfucker is closed down on strike, Jack, and we're whistling this over.
Why doesn't the strike committee add some of our demands, like ending ROTC?
How? You want to off ROTC. All you have to do is go down to the ROTC building, take a bottle, fill it full of gasoline, plug it with a rag.
Yeah, man, but what if you want to end sociology?
Listen, man, Molotov cocktail is a mixture of gasoline and kerosene. White radical is a mixture of bullshit and jive. Right on.
You know, I don't have to prove my revolutionary credentials to you. You know, there's a lot of white students who are already out on the streets fighting just like you guys do in the ghetto. And, you know, there's a lot of unhappy, dissatisfied white people who are potential revolutionaries.
Yeah. Y'all dealing with things that are really irrelevant. Because you're going back to the same thing you get busted for grass and that makes you a revolutionary. No, when them pigs get to busting you on your head, so you're kicking down your door, stopping you from living, when you can't get a job, you can't go to school, you can't eat, that's what makes you a revolutionary.
Wait a minute.
Like you say, in another bag.
No, we're talking about talking to white students. That is, I think we understand. A lot of us have understood what makes black people revolutionaries, but what's going to make white people revolutionries?
That's the question. I mean, you know.
And that's what you discussed.
The same goddamn thing that makes black people revolutionaries.
But it's not happening
wrong
the same way.
You just wait. It will happen. Well, you don't have to do anything to instigate it. What you can do is prevent it. Or you can break it down and you can do something. But
how's
the country going pell-mell into fascism? I mean, the pigs are on the campus now. Next, what do you want them? Sitting up in the classroom? You want them in your door? You want them standing on the street every time you walk out?
No, but they're not on the
line.
You
have to wait to get to that to be revolutionary.
Oh, now, what we're saying is this school is going to close down, period. There ain't nobody coming in this school unless they come at their own risk. And once they decide they want their school back open, they're going to open it on our terms, period.
Is that so? Why stop the students that want to go? I mean,
because they're in our way. Because they prevent us from getting what we deserve. We have tried all other means. We've negotiated. We've pleaded. We've written programs. We've done this. We haven't got anything. All right.
The whole point, basic point of any form of guerrilla confrontation is that the enemy is invisible. Things happen. They don't know where, they don't know how. People do things, and the people who they have their attention focused on are being nothing but attracting attention.
I don't think that's the stage we're at yet. I mean, we're just beginning to involve people.
If you want to shut this school down, what do you plan to do?
But we do not have white support on this campus yet, and until we do, we deal in mass
tactics. The student union is not running no performance. We're going to depend on that to shut this school down.
But not like this question about the enemy being invisible. Well, I think you're wrong. You know, in terms of white support, I don't think it really matters that much, because if we're successful tomorrow, what will happen is that the cops will consider every student, every single student, whether he's on the picket line or whether he's one of us or not, every student an enemy. And once that happens, then I think eventually, if we can keep up the pressure, then it will be a popular white.
You're not correcting and you isolate yourself later for the other motherfuckers.
Did you fix up the new coffee?
Can a man make coffee around here anymore?
Good for you.
I say that we form 4 or 5-man attack squads of our own to be stationed just outside the campus, and when the cops move in on the strike lines, they move form a diversionary force behind the cops, so the picket lines have time to get out of their way.
Can we use the
car? Wait a minute. Now, wait a minute.
Aren't cars an effective blockade?
Cars?
Cars?
On a campus?
Sure.
Strategically,
Wait. How about your car?
It's a Ford Falcon, man. Go ahead.
Drive it up, Jack. I'll send it over.
Well, I mean, the
reason why we try to make change right here on the campus is
don't talk about your life.
On this campus, we can't live in the community, man. We're talking about
it. What are you talking about?
We're talking about
the community.
Only one way to talk to the man, and that's in his own language. If the man's language is his gun, you talk to him with a gun.
That's
very simple.
Are you willing to die?
Black people are dying, and a lot of black people have died already in this country. Black people have earned this leadership in blood, Jack. We're not going to give it up.
Well, I'm willing to die, too.
Alone?
Not a boredom.
Who the hell is he? He's okay. He's my roommate. I guess the meeting's just during his trip.
Look, man, if he didn't come to join us, he shouldn't have come at all.
Why the hell not? How else is he going to determine whether or not he wants our...
Well, what is this? Meetings aren't his trip. What kind of nonsense is that? If he wants to be a revolutionary, he has to learn to work with other people.
This is where he had to come and find out.
What was any revolutionary without other people? What was Lenin without his organization? What was Castro without his organization? Even anarchists spent most of their lives talking in meetings, for Christ's sake.
You ought to take him in and go back and start teaching him out of the Red Book or something. Teach him the first page. It teaches about if there's going to be a revolution, there must be a revolutionary party. That's bourgeoisie individualism that he's indulging in. It's going to get him killed.
Resolutely struggle against bourgeois individualism.
Los Angeles students openly discussing revolution. From Michelangelo Antonioni's Zabriskie Point. And here's Sly Stone on the Dick Cavett Show. Back in the early 70s.
You cut yourself. Did you have trouble getting here?
I got my house broken into.
Why are you injured there? Was that during performance?
I broke into my house.
Caught yourself breaking into your house, did you?
Actually, I caught myself trying to repair it.
Yeah.
I cut myself, man.
It's an actual wound, but it doesn't look... I think it's just a flesh wound. I mean, I don't think it's going to be...
Is there sympathy that I'm getting?
Oh, yeah.
Is it sympathy?
Yeah. Sympathy, yeah. Considering that you were almost late getting here.
How come I can't
as much sympathy as I can...
Well, I can understand the house being broken into.
Oh, was it today?
Yeah, if it was your house, you'd be a little late.
Oh, yeah. That's right. You were going to be here one other time, and
you said
never...
That's right.
You never got here. You remember
that? Yeah, I was here.
I mean physically here.
I was there marching.
Huh?
No.
No, tell me the truth.
I wasn't here, man.
Had I said something?
No, you're great.
You seem to get here every
you
other
are
time,
great,
and
man.
I just wondered.
You are great.
I'm great.
Oh. I mean, you know what I mean? Boom. Right on. funny thing, right? No, for real. For real. Hey, Dick.
Yeah, yes.
Dick.
Yes,
Dick.
Sir. Yes,
hey,
sir.
Dick.
You have my entire attention.
Hey, Dick.
Yeah.
You're great.
I find it hard to keep this conversational ball in the air. I don't know. But I it's nice of you to say that. And
you are, really, though.
Well, you're not so bad yourself.
I mean, you're funny. Well, I am kind of bad.
Well, a little.
But I'm not so bad. You're right.
Yeah.
I'm not so bad, man.
Yeah. You're straight on.
Yeah, I am straight in. In order to get to it, you got to go through it.
That's right.
That's really the truth.
Yeah. Who said that? Was it Emerson, Thoreau?
No, Jimmy Ford.
Jimmy Ford.
Yeah.
Right. Just before the famous battle.
Oh, Jimmy Ford's in L.A. beating up people. No, not really.
Indeed.
Well, actually, what he's doing is writing beautiful songs.
Yes.
And he's destroying the minds of people that have been led to believe that the world is flat.
Ah. That about
hey,
sums
Dick,
it up.
Hey, Dick, Dick.
Yes,
Dick,
we'll,
wait, one more thing.
Our relationship
one more
will
thing.
Continue after this
one
message.
One more thing.
Tomorrow. We'll have right after this message.
Discrimination.
First of all, get back.
We have a brief message from our...
We're back. We're back. We had a brief message from our local stations. We're back.
Hey. We're black.
You're a magician with words. Listen, I want to ask you a straight question. Bill Graham was here, the man who closed the Fillmore East and the Fillmore West.
Who?
Bill Graham. Now, you know Bill Graham. And one of his reasons for doing it was that he got fed up with dealing with some...
Graham, man.
Yeah. Graham. I said Graham.
Yeah.
Well, we're both...
I know him so well. He's such a nice guy. I call him, something else.
What is that exactly?
I can't tell you.
Oh, but do you agree
Graham
with that?
Graham Cracker. You hit the Graham Cracker?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes.
He'll never let us play.
Do you think Graham was right in his complaints about, some of the acts being a little hard to work with?
I don't even know what he said. Seriously, I'd like to know.
Yeah. Well, he said that one of the reasons he got out of it was that the acts were ungrateful. They demanded an incredible amount of money that did not seem to reflect the favors that he had done for them in the past, and that they were in the hands of a lot of management that was very, very obnoxious to deal with, and that finally all the only fun in it was the money for him.
It's just, all it is, it's kind of hard for Bill Graham to make a final analogy when he doesn't do any sweating on stage.
He did a lot of sweating on stage. Sometimes the audience would heckle him.
Well, that's because he has an ulcer. Or something probably equivalent.
Yeah. So your relationship with him was not pleasant?
It's fine. Oh. That's why I'm telling you the truth.
Yeah. I like that. Tell another story.
Yeah. Hey, man. Hey, how come you guys got the same legs for us?
Huh? Like for us, too.
Yeah.
Say.
I used to do like this in the pool room.
Yeah, you just had your legs crossed.
Yeah, I was trying to be,
That's supposed to be more masculine.
What?
To cross your legs like that than if you cross them like that.
You know what happens?
No, what?
You just change positions.
Yeah. Do you feel like you...
We have a brief message from our local stations.
That's right, and that's where it's at, baby.
Let me say it, man.
We do have a brief message from our local stations. We'll be right back.
Examples of resistance. Yes, yes, that was Sly Stone. Now, his resistance, I guess, is to just be stoned. He was one of the original gangsters, and everything is about resistance if you understand it. And the Beats in the 50s, they had their own kind of resistance. Examples of resistance. Here's The Source.
Jack, I've got a couple of square questions, but I think the answer would be interesting. How long did it take you to write On the Road?
3 weeks.
3 weeks? That's amazing. How long were you on the road itself?
7 years.
7 years. Yeah, I was on the road once for 3 weeks, and it took me 7 years to write about it. Or the other way around. I've heard that you write so fast that you don't like to use regular typing paper, but instead you prefer to use one big, long roll of paper. Is that true?
Yeah. I write narrative novels, and I want to change my narrative thought, I keep going.
Wonderful part of Jack's on the road was when he said, "Our battered suitcases were piled on the sidewalk again. We had longer ways to go, but no matter. The road is life."
I'd often dreamed of going west to see the country, always vaguely planning and never taking off. I left with my canvas bag and took off for the Pacific Ocean.
The whole nation was tilting westward. It was like a drink that had been stirred for the Second World War, and it hadn't settled down yet.
Somewhere along the line, I knew there'd be girls, visions, everything. Somewhere along the line, Pearl would be handy.
There's just nothing like being out on American road. You get outside, something happens to you, and when you're traveling through outside, the wind goes over the top of your head, and you get a static charge. You'll see people with their hair standing on end like this who've been driving a long time, and their eyes kind of wild. It's a high.
The center of gravity of our imagination and poetics moved off the East Coast and came out into these grasslands. There was the expansion of a heart to learn and enjoy all of America. And that included, as you see in Jack's work and in Alan's work, the lives and minds of ordinary people.
We arrived at Council Bluffs at dawn. All winter I'd been reading the great wagon parties that held council there. And, of course, now it was only cute suburban cottages all laid out in the dismal gray dawn. Then Omaha, and by God, the first cowboy I saw in a 10-gallon hat and Texas boots looked like any beat character the brick-walled dawns of the East, except for the ghetto.
America, this is quite serious. America, this is the impression I get from looking in the television set. America, is this correct? It's true, I don't want to join the army or turn lathes and precision parts factories. I'm nearsighted and psychopathic anyway. America, I'm putting my queer shoulder to the wheel.
And away we go!
Into the interior. A vast subdivision antennae of television to the meaningless sky. In life-proof houses, they hover over the young. Sop up a little of what they shut out. Only the young bring anything in, and they are not young very long.
Just ahead, over the rolling wheat fields, all gold beneath the distant snows of Estes, I'd be seeing old Denver at last. There were smokestacks, smoke, rail yards, red brick buildings, and the distant downtown gray stone. I stumbled along with the most wicked grin of joy in the world among the old bums and beat cowboys. I felt like an arrow that could shoot out all the way.
A high tower on a wide plain. If you climb up one floor, you'll see 1,000 miles more.
Right over those knolls over there, something wonderful is going to be. But you found out the more you went, there was just more knolls.
So, in America, when the sun goes down, and I sit on the old broken-down river pier watching the long, long skies over New Jersey, and sense all that raw land that rolls in one unbelievable huge bulge over to the West Coast, and all that road going, think of Dean Moriarty, or even think of old Dean Moriarty, the father we never found. Think of Dean Moriarty. I think of Dean Moriarty.
Well, I don't think there is any real meal. If
Kerouac, I think, has had a sort of an idealized figure of Neil as this on-the-road character. I mean, he's sort of the on-the-road personified.
It was such an overwhelming trip. Cassidy, I don't know. I it's hard to even know what to say about Cassidy. He was so singular. He was the first person I met who he himself was the art. A lot of people thought he was crazy, you know. A lot of people were afraid of him, and most people I know didn't understand him at all, you know. But he was like a musician.
He was like Charlie Mingus. He played the bass line. Whatever else happened was happening around his bass line, and he used the gearship and the bus, and that kind of going at the turn of the
bass. Jack was in poker face with bullets back with bits.
No one was there, but I was.
Real hunched at the wheel, putting everyone in stitches.
All right, see you, Keith.
Bragging about some nurses screwed while driving through Nebraska. When she came, she honked the horn.
Cassidy was a sort of self-taught prison boy who came to New York to go con Kerouac into teaching him how to write.
He was a great driver.
Cassidy's always behind him.
And I don't mean a fast driver. I mean a great driver. His page was this highway, and that his writing tool was one of these cars.
All right, here we go. One-handed delight. That's masturbating. No.
Nothing in the world he liked better than getting about six scared kids in the car and bring them back about 3 days later, and their eyes looked like fried bolts.
His special thing was that he could remember the chain of thought that went before that led up to a moment of conversation.
I went here yesterday and jumped and jittery around, and so it looked like I was high, so I just let people think I was high. Everybody has forms, and everything's known, and the forms are changing. There's no life in the forms.
And just this whole body language and everything was so communicative. It was just amazing.
It's already too late. The Pentagon has taken care of all, and we're doing this deliberately. As far as that goes.
The Pentagon is doing what to the world?
Well, I don't know who's running the country. Do you?
We began rolling in the foothills before Oakland and saw stretched out ahead of us the fabulous white city of San Francisco. No more land, yelled Dean. Can't go no further because there ain't no more land.
The war displaced everyone, and they didn't go back home. It was a little like after any war, and it was certainly like after the Civil War when people like Mark Twain were displaced and ended up in San Francisco. He was a carpetbagger in a way, just like the East Coast beats were all carpetbaggers, including myself. We were in a tradition of dissidents. So we started City Lights. The idea was to create a literary meeting place.
There was already cultivated a San Francisco Renaissance. There always was a anarchist, pacifist, anti-Stalinist, anti-authoritarian, literary, bohemian, anti-war circle.
People who want to be themselves, basically. People who want to remain true to their very being. People who don't want to play the game. People who want to be whatever they are.
And that manifested itself in literature, in painting, in bohemian parties, poetry readings.
I would go into a macho bar and jump on the pool table and read some poems. Now, either I got beat up or I made $50. Most of the times I made $50. It was a cold night in the big city where love is the roar and death is the beat, and I yelled like a madman at the top of my voice. Everybody sing, everybody sing.
Like, man, I'm here, and I mean, I've met a swinging group here. I like Frisco the most, man, because, I mean, the town jumps, you know? I mean, there are a lot of scenes, man, and so, I mean, it's like that, you know?
Uh-huh.
Kenneth Rexroth is sort of the philosopher, the anarchist philosopher who preceded us in San Francisco, said that San Francisco was to the artists as Barcelona was to the Spanish anarchists. That is, it was a haven for thinking and feeling people. In those days, we were all outlaws. Anybody who had feelings of their own or had their hair a little bit too long or had an idea of their own or wanted to experience new states of consciousness or to deepen themselves or to grow a soul or to feel anything out of the ordinary was a renegade.
I'm Stephen Ronan, beat historian. Here I am at 3119 Fillmore, location of the former Six Gallery, where poet Allen Ginsberg debuted his poem Howl. And history hasn't been the same since.
Rex Roth had been invited to organize a reading at the Six Gallery. He suggested to McClure or myself that we organize it, and it fell to me. And Rex Roth gave me Gary Snyder's address. Snyder was a student studying Chinese, Japanese, and Zen.
Alan and I lined up that space with the idea of holding a reading for our various relatively unpublished friends.
What we were interested in was our own writing and talking with people who were also trying to write and paint and whatever else, and trying to get our way someplace else, get a new start that would gently replace a lot of this slobber.
And we stepped out on the stage.
With Kerouac in the audience, with Neil Cassidy in the audience.
We didn't know who would be there, we didn't know who to expect.
I followed the whole gang of howling poets to the reading at Gallery 6 that night, which was, among other important things, the night of the birth of the San Francisco Poetry Renaissance. Scores of people stood around in the darkened galleries straining to hear every word of the amazing poetry reading as I wandered from group to group, urging them to glug a slug from the jug, or wandered back and sat on the right side of the stage, giving out little wows and guesses of approval.
Devlin was only half as far that night, listening to the burnt phrases, when I heard the poet out rhyming erection.
When Alan read Howl, we all knew that a line had been drawn in the sand. We decided that we would put our foot on that line that Alan drew.
I was there, and the next morning I sent a telegram to Allen Ginsberg saying, I greet you at the beginning of a great career. When do we get the manuscript?
I had a conversation with Rex Roth the next day. I said, gee, I'm going to be famous in San Francisco or North Beach. And he said, you're going to be famous from bridge to bridge.
The first edition was printed in England. It was seized by the U.S. Customs in San Francisco. All during the trial, we were still selling it. But we never took the book out of the window.
There were a series of trials in the late 50s that liberated the word, and that meant a whole spiritual liberation after that.
It's really hard to get that kind of publicity.
What I've always loved about Alan is precisely his bravery. I once wrote a poem about him. It went like this. Sometimes I think that ugly little queer, that four-eyed kike, is the bravest man in America.
From the 1999 film The Source, about how the Beat Generation has affected the generations that follow, another example of a willingness to resist. We've had an example of students actively discussing what to do. We've had an example of getting stoned out and still making money. And we have an example of how like-minded people can create a renaissance. One last example, Frank Zappa on the CNN Crossfire show on March 28th, 1986, here is Zappa, a conservative, discussing the rock lyric events.
Crossfire,
20 years ago.
On the left, Tom Brayden. On the right, Robert Novak. In the Crossfire, Washington Times columnist John Lofton
Mooney.
And rock musician Frank Zappa.
Good evening. Welcome to Crossfire. What you've got here is suggestive, and I don't find it objectionable. But when you actually listen to the words of the songs, you get a shock. Personally, I find some of them in such bad taste as to make me physically ill, and some of them I wouldn't have in the house. Now, on the other hand, do we want the government to ban the sale of records with lyrics the government doesn't like? Do we want the government to say this is okay, but this one will have to go? And who should be the government censor? Whose job should it be to listen all day to dirty records and decide whether you can? Do you want censorship of records as is now being proposed in Maryland and in congressional hearings? Or do you want to make the decision on your own? Take it or leave it, all by yourself. Bob?
Mr. Zappa, let me see if I can get your position straight. Are you saying that there is no filth, no pornography, no obscenity that should not be permitted to be sold and distributed freely in this country in the form of music videos and rock music?
I don't think that music qualifies as pornography. And especially since this whole business started with words. We're talking about words here.
All right.
All the complaints were about words.
All right, take the pornography out there. Is there no filth, no obscenity that you think would qualify to be suppressed?
We're talking about words, and I don't believe that there is any word that needs to be suppressed. There's no scientific or realistic reason why you should keep people from hearing certain words.
Yeah, but Mr. Zappa, let me just follow that up.
There are certain words you use that are to describe an act of fornication, which are brutal.
So?
Well,
how about putting that on the radio? That's not permitted to be put on the radio. Do you think it should be?
Yes.
You think it should be on the radio?
Absolutely.
And on television?
Absolutely.
And
in politics.
I don't understand.
Because
that.
It's already in politics. I think that if you use the so-called strong words, you get your point across faster and you can save a lot of beating around the bush. Why are people afraid of words?
Well, look, Mr. Zappa, we're not talking about just words. When we talk about rock videos,
we're not talking about rock videos.
I beg your pardon, but
the whole thing is words.
I beg your pardon, but what they're trying to
They're selling it with rock
what
videos.
What they're trying to restrict in Maryland is also obscene rock videos.
No, they are not.
Well, they are. They're trying
words.
To apply the obscenity language to videos and to records. But why do you underestimate the power of words? Words have consequences. They have impact on people. Now, I agree with you that the first line of responsibility is the family to stop the kind of garbage that we're talking about here today. But good grief, can't we call on our government to help us in this fight, Frank? I mean, you have kids. Are you an anarchist? Is it the government's role to do nothing about this?
No, I'm a conservative, and you may not like that, but I am. And the fact of the matter is, this bill that they're talking about in Maryland is stupid.
How so? What is the function of government, Frank? The civil government. Isn't it to, in part, promote the general welfare and to help protect families?
Do you think that you're protecting somebody by taking away seven words?
It's not just words.
It is words. It's about words.
Words also connote ideas, Mr. Zappa. Are you for songs that portray incest as just another kind of sex and perhaps even preferable sex? Are you for that?
Would you ban the mention of any incestual activities? Would you?
Well, why don't we make a pact?
Then why don't you better take
show?
A look at the Bible
yeah.
and see what's in there, what yeah. happens after Sodom and Gomorrah.
The Bible does not advocate incest.
But it
condemns
it,
Frank.
It mentions
Wake up.
It. Wait
well, we're talking about advocacy, Mr. Zappa.
No, we're not. We're talking about words.
No, we're not
talking
about
content
words.
Of the words.
Oh, you don't think words connote ideas, huh?
Yes, they can be assembled yeah. into sentences that get yeah. ideas
Well, how about
across?
Answering my question about incest? Do you support records that promote incest as just another kind of sex, or in some instances it might even be preferable? Do you agree with that?
No, I don't agree with it. I have no interest in incest, but I don't think that anybody in his right mind would uh-huh. desire to have the government step in to make sure that they install a censor board that keeps certain things from being said.
Let me ask you something, Mr. Zappa.
Because sometimes the dumbest thing that gets said makes the point for you. And if a person is doing a song about incest, it gives you a chance to say, maybe incest is really wrong. I didn't realize that incest was such a terrible problem in the United States that we suddenly needed government intervention to cure incest in America by keeping words off of records.
Well,
Mr.
Of course,
Zappa,
incest in America didn't used to be such a terrible problem, did it, Mr. Zappa? That's come about in the last 20 years or so.
Oh, come on, John, that's not so.
Oh, really?
I understand.
Not as a problem. Advocated in songs.
I understand your
sure.
position on government censorship, but just you're a musician, you're a producer, you're a big man in show business. Do you think it is a good idea? Let's not say that the government's going to get in this all. Just as a matter of taste, of artistic preference, do you think it's a good idea to write lyrics that says incest is good for you? Does that make any sense?
Well, it might make sense to Prince. That's his business, because that's mainly the song that they're talking about.
But don't you
okay?
have an opinion on
it? My opinion is he's got a right to sing it, he's got a right to say it,
really?
And I got a right
really?
To not
buy
it.
Where does that right come from, Mr. Zappa? Where does the right to advocate incest come from?
That song does not advocate incest.
No, there are songs that advocate incest.
Tell me them. I haven't heard them.
Says incest.
Well, you ought to get out more. I don't think you're being candid with us. You know what those signs are. songs are. Now, you said there's a right to do this. Where does the right come from? Your group was called the Mothers of the Invention.
Mothers of Invention. You've got to get out more.
Yeah, and you're a very inventive guy. You make up a lot of stuff, like what was in the mind of the founding fathers. Would you look in the camera and tell them? Any camera.
And tell them. Are you directing the show now?
Yeah, that's right. Well, you certainly need some direction, Mr. Zappa.
Want to spank me here? Come on, what are you trying to do?
Oh, you into that too, huh? No, I'm not into spanking.
I love it when you froth like that.
Sure. Now, would you tell our viewers that what the founding fathers...
I thought he was going to be the one frothing today. I'm glad that you're doing it.
Wrong again, Frank. Wrong again.
Now, I got a napkin for you when you rule.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Him too.
Now, would you look in the camera and tell him with a straight face that you think the founding fathers had in mind the kind of garbage you sing and write when they drafted the First Amendment? Do you really believe that, Mr. Zappa?
I don't think it applies. The founding fathers, for one thing, kept slaves. And take a look at what Benjamin Franklin used to do over at the Hellfire Club.
But you have repeatedly...
Not exactly
you
have a bunch of swell guys. I think they had some good things in mind. But we have a document, the letter of the law. Yeah. Let's use the letter of the law and interpret it based on the 20th
century. Wait a minute. It is relevant because you have repeatedly, in opposing even ratings for rock music, you have repeatedly cited the Constitution and the First Amendment. Do you think the founding fathers really had the First Amendment, that they gave us the First Amendment to defend songs that glorify Satanism and incest and suicide? Do you really believe
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
You really believe
that?
Yeah,
I believe it.
Well, you're an idiot, then. You're an idiot.
Well, I'll tell you what. Kiss my... How do you like
take your teeth out. Take your teeth out and we'll talk business.
All right, fellas, that's fine. Let's cool it off.
Come on, let's get into the series here. Come on, let's froth.
Mr. Zappa,
one thing you did I didn't think you'd do is you ducked a question. I thought you'd
ask. Which one?
I understand your position in the government. I understand you have an absolutist position on the First Amendment. A lot of people have an absolutist position. But I asked you a question and you ducked it. I want you to tell me if you think that the lyrics saying that incest is a good thing have any artistic value or are in good taste, or if you approve them. You must have some standards of your own. I'm not talking about the government.
You asked me for my opinion. I don't enjoy that kind of material. I'm not here to sell records for Prince or anybody else.
Yeah, but you defend it being sold, don't you?
Yes, I do defend it.
Well, then you're part of the problem.
Don't you think it would be a good thing to say to some of these people to cool it?
No, it's not my job.
What is your job?
My job is to represent myself.
What is your job? You once wrote a song called "We're Only in It for the Money."
It's not a song. It's the name of an album.
Is that right?
You ought to get out more.
Yeah. How much money you made peddling this stuff, Mr. Zappa?
Millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars, Mr. Lofton.
All right. Look, it seems to me, Mr. Zappa, that you've got to ask these people, both of them are on you,
He's accusing me of doing something that is similar to what that is being argued about. My lyrics aren't in question here.
Well, What would you propose, Mr. Lofton, as the means of censorship?
Well, I said I agree with Mr. Zappa that the first line of defense and responsibility is the parents. But what I do not agree with is that the parents have to stand alone, and we are not entitled to call upon our government to help us in the fight against this kind of filth.
What government censor is going to decide for you?
It's not... Tom, I've heard you say repeatedly on this show that we are our government, that we're allowed to call on our government.
Well, you have to have a man who is the censor or a woman.
Well, the way it would work.
Have to decide this Tom. Lofton can hear and this That's Lofton right. cannot hear.
Tom, it would work the way the implementation of any law works. You pass a law, it has words in it, and then the elected representatives of the people try their best to apply it. It's the way you do it with everything else. Will they apply it perfectly? No. But we're entitled to use the force of our civil government to help protect our families. How could you oppose that? Does the government have any purpose, Frank?
Yeah, it has a number of purposes.
What is it? Name
I'm not going to give you a civics lesson here, but I'll tell you one thing. We must not see eye to eye on the idea of a government that must forbid things in order to
protect
families.
Really? What is the government's role? You've told me several times what it shouldn't do.
How about national defense?
Yeah, I consider this national defense, pal. Our families are under attack from people like you with these lyrics.
John, you don't have to buy them.
Mr. Zappa.
Could I make a statement about national defense?
Yeah.
The biggest threat to America today is not communism. It's moving America toward a fascist theocracy. And everything that's happened during the Reagan administration is steering us right down that pipe.
Oh, Mr. Zappa, do you really think? All kidding aside, in this country, with the permissiveness that we are moving toward a fascist theocracy, anything...
you bet we are, buddy.
I mean, do you think things like this would have ever been permitted?
Give me that famous smile again.
When we were kids, you're about my age, maybe
I'm
a little
45.
Younger. Well, I'm 55. Do you think when I was a kid that they would permit songs like that to be sold? I mean, permissiveness is the game. I mean, well, exactly. I mean, you're not really serious if you're saying we're going toward a fascist theocracy.
That's right, we are.
Wait a minute.
In what way? Give me one example
of a fascist theocracy.
When you have a government that prefers a certain moral code mm-hmm. derived from a certain religion, and that moral code turns into legislation to suit one certain religious point of view, and if that code right. happens to be very, very right-wing, almost toward Attila the Hun...
Well, then you are an anarchist. Every form of civil government is based on some kind of morality, Frank.
Morality in terms of behavior, not in terms of theology.
Well, of course, but look, I mean, I couldn't believe in your hearing.
Wait a minute, gentlemen. We have to take a break now.
Okay. We're going to come
and
back.
We'll be back with John Lofton and Frank Zappa talking about...
John Lofton from the Washington
music,
Times.
I think,
Frank
after
Zappa
these messages.
On Crossfire. We have another segment. Ooh, rock videos. You're listening to Kill Radio. Live.
Is a producer and musician who has testified before Congress that he does not think that rock music, dirty lyrics and all, should be censored.
Or rated.
John Lofton takes the other view. Mr. Lofton.
Yes.
You don't have to buy this, you know. You don't have to buy this music with dirty words.
Well, I guess my concern extends beyond my own family, beyond my own children. I'm concerned about the whole society, the whole country, other people's families.
Can you control what your children buy?
Not completely, but I try. I agree, and I want to say for the third time, I agree with Frank that is the first line of responsibility.
But you can't even control what your children...
No, as they get older, it's very difficult.
No, but you can control what they listen to in the house and the rock music.
Tell me how you can.
They're
do
rarely
that.
In the house.
You hear it, so you just go up and turn it up.
Shut themselves up in the room, and you can't hear it.
I hear it. I turn it. I go up, and I throw the record away.
You can't hear half the things I tell you. You can't hear those things.
Look, all you're trying to get around is the fact that you have an individual responsibility. And I think Mr. Zappa is right. That's as far as it can go.
Well, but, you know, one of the things that interests me is the seemingly totally different worlds that you and I live in, Mr. Zappa. For example, you told this hearing last September that in America, quote, there is a tendency to hide sex, unquote. That is the most ridiculous statement I've ever heard. Sex is everywhere in America. It's on TV, radio, videos, advertising. What do you mean we hide sex in America?
You do hide sex in America because given the choice between putting erotic sex mm-hmm. into a television show or putting violence, usually it is the violence that is opted
How
for.
How about both?
Putting both in?
Yeah.
Or you mean in combination?
Well, I mean both. I mean the television is full of sex right now.
It's not really sex. It's just it's full of titillation.
How about advertising? Is that full of sex?
It's titillation.
I see.
Mr. Zappa, when somebody mentioned the videos, you said, hey, no, this is not it. But why don't you want to talk about the videos?
The reason I don't want to talk about the videos is the issue came up over the lyrics and what they have done in trying to promote the issue. If rock videos did not exist, they wouldn't have had those flashy little bumpers to put on before each of the local news shows when they would do a story on this.
Well, do you feel differently about rock videos then, that they should be censored?
No, I don't. I just think that you shouldn't even discuss them when the topic is words.
But I mean, we can discuss anything we want.
Oh, sure.
But you think anything goes on the rock videos just like anything goes on the lyrics?
Sure.
I'm told that there is a rock video that it's about to come out that has a school teacher undressing in front of a student.
It's out already. It's one of the ones they use for bumpers. They showed it at the Senate hearing. It's called Hot for Teacher, and the group is Van Halen.
What do you think of that?
I think it's amusing.
Amusing.
You think kids should see it? Why do you think the kids should
because
see it? I want to tell people what it's about a little bit. He thinks it's amusing mm-hmm. that you might have a grade school class that is hot for teacher in a sexual way. Why is that amusing?
Why shouldn't it be amusing?
Well, you're not smiling. You don't look too happy about the video.
Well, why should I smile
while
I'm sitting here with you?
Well, you can fake it, right?
I like him better than you. Does that give you a rough idea of what's going on
here? It sure does. Uh-huh. But, of course, I had that before I came here. Uh-huh. What's amusing about it?
That is amusing to the people who like the concept of here comes the teacher. Mm. You expect the teacher to be sour. The music starts. The teacher takes off her clothes, and she is wearing some kind of a bathing suit like in a beauty contest and does a dance on the desk, and the kids look up, and they are having a good time.
Well, that's a real laugh riot, Frank. Mm. Now, look, one of the things I don't understand is someone who writes why you have repeatedly denigrated words and said, well, something's just words. You know, Adolf Hitler used words very effectively. It was called the big lie, and what it resulted in was 6 million Jews being put into ovens. Now, why do you say that words aren't important and don't have consequences?
I didn't say the words weren't important.
What do you mean when you say just words?
This argument basically is about the 7 dirty words that the FCC complains about. And that's what it is. And I don't see any reason to keep people from hearing those syllables put together. Those are not magic words. That's not abracadabra. You're going to turn into something when you hear it.
Do they have an impact, you think?
Certainly they do. And it depends on how they're used and in what context. In fact, the big one, the one that starts with the F, has maybe about 15 different ways in which it can be used in language.
Mr. Zabba, you were talking about the social background of the Founding Fathers, so you're a student of American sociology. But let me ask you this. Do you think that this country, you get around this country a lot, I'm sure, do you think that the lyrics of these songs reflect the real spirit of this country?
It reflects certain aspects of the spirit of this country.
You think it does?
If you don't like the spirit, then change the things that make the spirit happen. In other words, if you have kids that are rebellious, and you have kids who are hopeless, and you have kids who go to drugs, then give them something to hope for.
Like what? What would you tell a kid he ought to hope for nowadays, Frank?
What I tell kids, and I've been telling kids for quite some time, is first, register to vote, and second, as soon as you're old enough, run for something.
And you really think that's going to give kids hope to tell them to go register for vote?
Mr. Zappa, when you were...
Well, I don't know whether it makes them commit suicide, but I think it gives them a little bit more hope.
Mr. Zappa, testifying in Annapolis yesterday, I think, or this week, at any rate, they had some kids from New York picketing outside who were from a school for the mentally disturbed, and they said that that rock music almost ruined their life, rock music really disturbed them. Didn't that give you some pause as to maybe you were making, that you might be an error on this question?
Well, see, you're an error as to where those kids came from. It's not a school for the mentally disturbed. It is a place called Freedom Village, run by a man named Pastor Fletcher A. Brothers, a Christian organization. He collects money for it. They have a farm in upstate New York. I've debated Pastor Brothers on the radio before. I've also seen his literature. Basically, what he has done is taken the children who have come to his place for rehabilitation. I don't know where he gets them, who sent them, but he carts them around the country in the Freedom Village bus and makes them go in and testify as to all the bad things that happened to them before they came to his place, and then he connects it to rock music. Let me tell you some of the things that are included in this man's literature. He sends out this folder, it's about this thick, that has a list of different people in rock and roll, their names, their records, and their crime against humanity, so to speak. Some of the people who are included in this list are Stevie Wonder, and his crime is that he has an album that mentions astrology. In his folder, there are two or three mentions of astrology and maybe three or four mentions of Hinduism. He cites the Who because they had a Hindu prayer on one of their albums. And
let
I question him on the air.
Let me ask you about something you said. I want to talk. Now, you've talked for a little while, okay? I think your answer about where hope is supposed to lie shows the bankruptcy of what once used to be the radical message. We have millions of kids in this country, Frank, who may be suicidal, who see no meaning in life, who see no hope in life, and you're going to tell them that the hope is in registering to vote, Frank? Are you serious?
Are you trying to dissuade them from registering to vote? Are you trying to dissuade those kids from running for office? Is that what
John,
you're doing?
I mean, we're talking
John
about kids that don't know the meaning of life, Frank,
sorry,
and you tell them to
we
vote?
We are out of
That's no
time.
Answer.
We want to thank Mr. Zappa for being our guest on Crossfire, and John Lofton for being our guest on Crossfire. Bob and I will be back in just a minute.
Zappa's great, isn't he? That's wonderful. That's how you stand up, and that's how you resist. You come in with knowledge. Knowledge. You know what you're talking about. Remain skeptical. Don't listen to the lies. This has been the Chill Room's examples of kinds of resistance, how to resist. This is killradio.org.